He played 8 test matches for South Africa, but in 2016 his playing career came to a grinding halt at the age of just 26, when he suffered a serious neck injury that nearly paralysed him. 5 years later, former Springbok prop Julian Redlinghuis is the scrum coach at the Sigma Lions, grateful for his health and realising that he actually enjoys this coaching gig, much to his surprise. I catch him at home just outside Krugersdorp, where he says he likes to position himself close to nature.
Yeah, it's like a lifestyle estate, so it's a big farm, probably around 60 houses on it. So, yeah, okay. It sounds fancy. It's not fancy, but it's flippant. Like I said, yeah, there's a zebra coming in to drink water outside our fence, so it's not bad. So for us, we like the nature and we like farm and stuff. So for us, this is unbelievable. When we get a chance, we break out to the Kruger. That's the type of things we really enjoy. So this for us is really lekker.
Is that part of your upbringing? I mean, have you always been passionate about the bush?
Yeah, my dad and them. Well, I went hunting with my dad since a small age. It's a big passion of his. We actually went hunting this weekend, so fresh from my hunt. I've actually got some droevors. Droevors. Yeah, so it's something that I love. And then fortunately, I married her. My wife is also very fond about nature. And so Kruger is a big passion of ours. And you know, just like this. She grew up on a plot, so for her, open areas is unbelievable.
So give me a sense of what a normal hunt looks like and how it all plays out. Having not been on one myself, what do you end up shooting? And you clearly make your own biltong and droevors.
Yeah, no, I don't make it myself. I wish I could. But yes, I think it's actually a tough job. But yeah, so for me, it's more about the outing for me than the literal shooting of an animal. So normally it's my dad and myself and my boot. And that's the family hunt. Obviously with mates, it's a different hunt with your mates than with your family. But it's the outing, waking up early, driving to the farm. On the grondpad, if you hit the first dirt road, you have to open your first beer and then play some lekker music, and then the hunting starts. It's more the outing, sitting around the fire at night, and people telling stories. And that's the lekker part about the hunting. It's just outside in nature.
So that care around the fire at night must be lengthy and it must be fun.
Yes, it is good. But I'll take you up, then you'll experience it rather than hear of it. It'll be worth it.
So Julian, you're 31 now, and you're a coach at the Lions. I mean, life's obviously thrown you a few curveballs, and we'll chat about the neck injury, but If you go back 10 years as a young rugby player, do you think at the age of 31 you would think you'd be a coach with one of South Africa's provincial franchises?
No, not at all. It wasn't even in my plan whatsoever. I always said I'm definitely not going to coach after rugby. to answer your question, it's a definite no. Never thought I'd be involved in it. But I am enjoying every moment, and that's why I think I'm still involved, because it wasn't a plan whatsoever. Things just worked out that way, because I got involved after the injury, because I was still young with the injury. I think I was 26 or
26
so
at the time, yeah.
No, I was definitely not ready to get out of rugby by that time. So I got involved, because as a rugby player, you get that contract insurance the first year anyway, and I was still trying to be optimistic and thinking I'm going to play again. So I stayed involved and started doing a little bit of things off the field for the players, for the company. And then when my contract insurance ran out, they said, okay, but they'll give me a job as like player representative. And yeah, from there it just grew and grew, and then started taking over the scrum coaching and helping out the scrum coach at the time, or the forwards coach at the time. And then just grew from there. It's like almost like naturally happened all the time. So it was definitely not the plan. Even after I stopped playing rugby, it wasn't the plan to become a coach, but everything happened naturally. And like I said, now I'm really enjoying it. So
let's go back to that neck injury, because obviously it's a big part of your life and your career, and it's obviously dictated and played a role in where you are today. So it's 5 years now, almost exactly 5 years, short of a few months. Take us back to that day and your recollections of what actually happened and the aftermath and how it played out after that.
Yeah, I haven't actually told the story in a while, so thanks for asking. Can I refresh my memory a bit, Woody? It came at such an awesome time in my life. My wife was 5 months pregnant with our firstborn. She's now running around here, 4.5 years old, so it's crazy how the time has flown. But she was 5 months pregnant at the time. I just played the first time against the All Blacks, got back into the Springbok mix again the weekend before. I think it was the 7th of October. It was the last test I played, and then my Springbok contract, it was the first time I'm going to be contracted by the Springboks, was that Wednesday before the 14th or the 15th when I injured my neck. That Wednesday my agent phoned me, so everything was like playing out. It's almost like your dreams coming true. Everything's happening sharp at the moment. And then that Saturday playing for the Lions again against the Cheetahs in Bloom is when the injury happened. So obviously in the moment, the recollection of that is just remember taking the hit, and yes, everything was just pins and needles. My whole body, almost like when you hit your shock bone, you get that in your arm, but it was like my whole body was feeling that pins and needles. And then I remember lying there, and my mom always used to say when I play rugby and I'm lying, I was just moving my arms or something so that you can see I'm actually okay. And then I moved my arms. My arms was okay. I could move my arms, but I remember trying to move my feet and my toes, and I couldn't feel it. And it was obviously a strange feeling. How can you be prepared not to have feeling? So I tried to move my toes, and I actually tried to help the doctors and saying, I can get up. I'm going to stand up now. I don't stress. It's not bad. But I couldn't move my legs or my toes, and then flipped. Then the reality, I think, hit me. And I remember just lying there praying and saying thank you in advance that everything's going to be okay. Because that's the only thing I could think of at the time, is just to start praying. And from there, went to the hospital. A long story short, that evening they obviously took the x-rays and saw shit. There was a dislocation, fractured dislocation. But the thing that I'm very grateful for is, as the doctors explained it, it was dislocated on the one side, and on the other side it was like 1 millimeter away from dislocating on that side as well. And if that side dislocated, I would have been paralyzed completely. So it was, wow. The way I told it was like almost like a miracle. It was 1 millimeter away from being paralyzed. And as you can see today, I'm fully recovered. Obviously can't play again, which is massive. I don't want to underplay it. But it's nothing compared, the loss of that is nothing compared to the loss of not being able to walk or run or move my arms. Fortunately that night they put me in traction, and the next morning they were able to operate. And I came out of the operation, and my legs was fine, and my left arm was paralyzed. Couldn't even close my hand. There was no power, no strength in this left arm. That only came back after 3 months. I started being able to lift up my arm. I couldn't remember, couldn't do anything. Couldn't even turn my arm like this, nothing. This arm was dead. And the doctors, they didn't tell me at the time, but afterwards I said, that nerve, 80% or 90% of the time, when that nerve is damaged, it never recovers. And mine obviously made not a full recovery, but like a 95% recovery. And they never thought that was going to happen. The doctor said there's very, very small chance of me ever using this left arm of mine again. So that's also something to be grateful for. So firstly, not being paralyzed completely. And then secondly, after the nerve damage, this arm fully recovered. And actually, by the time my little one was born, I could hold in my arms and had the necessary strength by that time to jaw with her. And now I can throw them in the air. Like I said, 95% recovery, which is something to be truly grateful for.
Tell me, Julian, how do you think that, besides obviously the impact it had on your career and obviously, it ended your playing career, how do you think that neck injury changed you as a person, and did it change you as a person?
Yeah, I think my wife would be good to ask this question because... I think of that, it's not me, but I think anyone in life that experienced like something hectic like that, it's almost, you become way more resilient. So I really don't sweat the small things in life anymore. I think once you, and like I said, my injury is nothing compared to what a lot of people go through, but I think what it did give me is resilience in saying there's a lot of tough things out there. So I try to live a life of gratitude and just being thankful. And there's a lot that is wrong in the country at the moment, like, you know, there's a lot to be negative about. But I think what that neck injury did to me is it doesn't help being negative. The only thing that helps is being positive and looking for opportunities and looking for stuff to be grateful, even though there's not a lot to be grateful about, or it seemingly isn't a lot to be grateful about. But if we really sit down, myself and yourself, and we sit and we think what we can be grateful for, is actually way much more than we realize at any given time. So I think that's the main thing, and I'm actually grateful for that. Is now you realize, or realize it more, is that this life is so precious, and life is actually so good. But we tend to see the negative, and I think what the neck injury done, it made me see the positive more than the negative. And I think it does it for a lot of people. If you talk to people that's been through traumatic things and life-threatening situations, they come out of it way more grateful, way more optimistic. So I think that's the big change that I've realized. But I think my wife will tell you better, because she says nothing's ever bad for you. And I said, nothing is bad, because there's always opportunity. So we have this, actually our psychologist with the Lions at the time, Yannick Pitter. I don't know if you know of him or have met him, but he's a champion, made a big difference in my way of thinking. And there's one thing that he always says, is, I'll say it in Afrikaans, there's alles wat met my gebeur, gebeur vir my. So everything that happens to me happens for me. So that's why nothing's ever bad, because there's an opportunity. Either you're going to learn from it and grow from it, or it's something that happens lekker and it's something to be grateful for.
So you're part of quite a young coaching team at the Lions, Julian. I mean, obviously, you know, Warren Whiteley's high profile, having been next Lions and Springbok captain. He's 33, you're 31. It makes you not that far removed from your playing days. I mean, there must come times when the two of you look at each other and think, man, we could get out there and do a better job.
Well, I won't say we can do a better job, but what we do tell each other, especially with like big games, like the one against the British and Irish Lions, is we'll just look at it. We don't even have to say it to each other, but we both know, like, shit, we'd be lucky to run out now and jaw. So we do get those moments. I must say, like myself and Waz is obviously good mates. So it's lucky to do it together and have the forwards together and to experience all these learnings, because this last year and a half was really tough in the sense of things change like this, a game is cancelled, or you've got a couple of positive cases you have to problem solve the whole time. So it's lucky to go through this together, myself and Waz. And obviously Coach Cash is also a couple of years older than us, not a lot of years older than us, but also young and good mates of us. So Mzwaki is also still a youngster. Philip Lemmer is still a youngster. So it's actually only Coach Sean and us was that's a bit older, but you can't say old, but we call him the old Bali of us. But we're a young coaching group, and we've had a lot of trials this last year and a half.
Give us a sense of what it's like to have been coaching rugby in the last year, Julian, or 18 months. And maybe you've got to give us some examples of the things you've had to go through as coaches specific to COVID-19. I mean, some of the protocols and things you know, besides obviously games getting called off at the last minute because of a positive test, you know, maybe give us some insight as to what goes on at the stadium that we perhaps as fans wouldn't see, that you as coaches have to go through just to coach a rugby team.
No, that's a good question. I think the beginning was obviously when we were in a strict lockdown in the beginning. It was obviously we came back from Super Rugby Tour. That's now last year, March, so that's more than a year ago. That was tough, because now you have to keep the guys motivated to train, but you don't have any foresight as to when rugby is going to start again. Is rugby going to start again? Then there were salary cuts. So to keep the guys motivated and positive at that time was the biggest challenge, I guess. Then we started coming in. Then we could train in groups of five, if I remember correctly. That was the first way of training, is in groups of five, non-contact, no balls whatsoever, because you can't handle the ball, because then you have to wash the ball the whole time. So we had bins next to the field with sanitizers, and you have to run with the ball and then sanitize it and then run with the ball. So then it went from groups of five to groups of 10, and then we could do contact training, but with masks on. So you can imagine now the guys training with a mask. So as a coach, you had to think of drills in groups of five that is still rugby related, but non-contact, no balls, So the drills we came up with were interesting and fun at the time. So that's a long time ago. I think if I can bring it back to now, is now every week, Monday or Tuesday, you get tested, COVID tested. Then it's almost like picking a team and then waiting for the test results to come out. If the test results are there, the doctor has to do, if there's positive cases, have to do contact tracing, see who's been involved with that guy that might be a close contact, and then they are isolated. Then the rest of the team can train, and then if you're clean on a Tuesday, the guys that are clean will play that Saturday, and then the next week you wait for that test to come back. So we've been testing now every week since last year, every once a week. The bubble was interesting now with the British and Irish line test, because I think we were tested 5 times in 7 days to make sure you're clean the whole time. So, and then every time, like, in the British and Irish test, now there was one test that came positive. Then, and my fortune wasn't a player, it was one of the management that wasn't involved with anyone. But then we had to wait in our rooms. Everyone was in our rooms the whole time until we got the. Then we had to test again, wait in our rooms for, I think it was from 7 till 2 o'clock, the results came out. So at 2 o'clock, everyone negative. Okay, now we have to organize training. Now we have to, set meetings. So you send the guys a program, you say, guys, we don't know what time the results are going to come out. Be in your rooms until we let you know when you get the results. Got to organize meeting times, training times. It's problem solving the whole time.
Tell me, have you seen an impact on the players from a mental point of view? I mean, you've had sort of 15, 16 months of it. You've been able to look at perhaps the impact that COVID has had on the players from a mental point of view. You touched on... You know, that level of uncertainty, has it impacted the players, not knowing what's happening next almost?
Yeah, I think there's big concerns the whole time, because the contract or the salaries was cut in the beginning of COVID, and I think that remains a stressful fact for everyone. Is the salary going to be cut again? Because obviously it takes a severe impact on your income. So that remains a stress for the guys. And then obviously, you know, the rugby as a whole is not doing as well. So what is going to happen with my specific contract? Am I going to get a contract again? Am I going to get an increase or decrease? So I think that off-field stuff is really tough on the players. I must say, luckily with rugby or any sport, it's quite a positive environment because you train hard, and it's almost like a feel-good environment where you train hard. And obviously, when the results go your way, it's a nice feeling. So I think that gets the guys up mentally. But when you lose badly and things are unclear, and then I think it really does get tough. And then guys start stressing. And I could see this week now with the protest, you can see the guys are, because the guy, your wife will phone you and say, because she sees on the news, listen, Gauteng CBD, Joburg CBD is chaos, protest. So now they phone you, are you okay? What's happening? So I think it'd be naive to say it doesn't have an effect on the players and on their families, because now you get home and your wife's stressed about what's happening in the country. So I think it's naive to say that no, everyone in the country is not taking this effect. I think everyone's feeling it at the moment.
Do you guys, ordinarily as coaches, would you socialise together besides, obviously, take COVID-19 away and social distancing? Are you guys a unit that socializes together, or is it purely just a work relationship that you guys have?
No, I think it'll be interesting to hear what the players think, but we enjoy the time together. So because we're also young still, and I enjoy a braai and a beer, so whenever there's something like that arranged, obviously with COVID now, I've made it tough. But we try to socialize with the players as much as possible, because my personal opinion is if I care about you, I will work harder for you. Me as a player, the coaches that I felt care for me and spent time with me, I felt I would give them more of myself. And it's not in a literal way, but you know what I mean. It's
subconsciously, yeah.
Relationship. Yeah, subconsciously. Once there's a relationship and there's trust between two parties, I think it's easier to give criticism. It's easier to take criticism. So I believe the off-field socializing plays a role in that. It's not the only way to do it, but it does play a role in it, is to have good times together and not just talk work the whole time. builds that relationship and builds a trust, which then in turn makes me, enables me to coach them better and enables them to take the info that I give in a better way. So it is something that we enjoy, myself probably more than the other coaches, but it is something that I'll normally be one of the last guys there. I just enjoy it. Got a little bit of FOMO as well, so I think that doesn't help.
So who's the player equivalent in the Lions squad then of Julian Redlinghuis, if that's you on the coaching side, the last to leave? Who's the player that likes the party as much as you do?
Yes, there's actually a couple, eh? Like Dylan Smith, I know you've chatted to him before. Dylan Smith is definitely the last guy there. Dan Grill, well, Alan van der Sluis, Ruben Schoeman, Ruan Dreyer. No, the players are way more than the coaches that time of the evening. So the guys enjoy it. Even Felina is one of the guys that will be there last. Even a guy like Yanni du Plessis will have his times. But it's like for me, I enjoy it when a team enjoys a good time together as well. So we work hard together, but also when we have off time and we have time to enjoy each other, we do that hard as well. For me, it's lucky to see that. Yeah, I enjoy it.
Did you have that with when you played for the Springboks? Was that sense, was there a similar approach? Was it taken a bit more seriously and bit more professional? What are your recollections of your time with the box, and did you have that sort of spirit then as well?
Yeah, I think I was there in two different years. I was there, my first debut was with Heineke Meyer, Coach Heineke Meyer, but then I was like a lightie and still, so, and it was only for one tour. So, yeah, I was still with like John de Villiers and Victor Matfield, Brian Abana, they were all still joining at that time. So that was, there was a different culture back then. It was a bit more like that, more like, what is gefestig? More like, what is gefestig? I'm trying to think of the English word now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. My Afrikaans is a bit shaky, eh?
It sounds like my English is shaky. No, it was more like a set culture, if I can say that. And then when 2016, when I played again, that was new because Coach Alistair just came in. And it was a new coaching staff with new players, because that's when they changed the rule of the overseas guys can't play. So that was an interesting time, and we didn't have that culture of everyone knowing each other well, and guys enjoying each other off the field as much. And it was still like new and guys trying to find each other. So I think as that team grew, I think if you talk to the guys that were involved or are involved now, I think they'd say that is the culture now. I think the guys do enjoy the time off.
Obviously uncertain times right now, but you're 31, you're coaching at the Lions. Where would you like to see yourself in 10 years' time?
Yes, it's a good question, a difficult question. I actually spoke to my dad this weekend, driving back from the farm, and said to him, Flipper, I really don't know. And I always in my life, as I grew up, I really studied hard. I did well in school. I did well in university. So I thought I was going to be a CA, and I had like my whole life planned out. And I did do my degree, and I finished my CFP, post-grad diploma. So I finished all of that, and I always thought I'm going to go into business and only do that. So I played rugby as a platform to go into business. But now, yes, I don't know. To be honest, I'm just being 100% honest. I'm not sure where I'm going to see myself in 10 years. I am very faithful and religious. So I know that the Lord has good plans for me. So and I believe that what needs to happen will happen. And that's why I believe I need to be in the country now, because I didn't plan for it to happen. I didn't, I didn't encourage it to happen. So it happened. So I know I've got to be there. There's a reason for it. And whatever will happen, will happen. I do have the financial planning side that I'm not active in at the moment, because the coaching just takes a lot of time. And we've got like a small business with farming and a small business with property. So I really enjoy that side of things, the finance side of it. It's something that I really enjoy. So I'm busy with it. I had a couple of meetings this morning. And so trying to build that side of life as well for post-rugby. But I can't say. Maybe I'll still be involved in 10 years' time at rugby, because I really enjoy the environment. And I just really enjoy seeing guys making progress and becoming closer to their potential. I think that's my goal with rugby and in life is to see people get closer to the potential that they have. And rugby is such a, measurable. So you can see a guy and you work with a guy and you can see his improvement. And it's almost on a weekly basis. So I really enjoy that. That's I think, the biggest kick I get out of rugby, is to see the improvement in individuals and then see when the team's doing well and the guys are playing well. Yes, there's a massive satisfaction that comes from that. So yeah, long answer short again. I'm actually not sure at all where I'll be in 10 years, but I know it's going to be unbelievable.
Unbelievable indeed. So he likes a beer and a braai, but not so much having to sanitize rugby balls. What he does seem to have, though, is a good outlook on life. And after what he's been through, that's pretty impressive. Hats off, Julian Redlinghuis.